you're jumping onto white base. We're jumping onto white base.
New type sound effect.
La la. It's Kira Kira time.
Oh boy, what does this have to do with Star Trek Deep Space Nine?
Kira Kira.
All right, hello, and welcome to Superhuman Samurai Cyber Pod, our anime-themed sideshow in which my co-hosts torment me with the finest anime Japan has to offer. I'm Rob.
To be fair, I'm Jen, and we do pick particularly good anime.
I'm David. We try to. Anime we've seen and generally liked so far.
So we pick up where we... This is episode number 4... The Witch's War. Now, to clarify, is this in any way related to the Witch from Mercury?
Kind of conceptually.
Okay.
Yes, but no.
Not directly.
Yeah, because both series, like, they started their planning stages at basically the same time. So there was probably cross-pollination, but mostly it's just that... Witches is a term from, what was it, World War II? Like, Russian women or something?
Yeah, there were Soviet pilots they called the Night Witches.
Yes. So it's just a term that gets used, I assume, by the enemy primarily for particularly skilled female pilots.
Right. Yeah. Now, is this a thing that had been previously used in Gundam before?
No.
No.
Okay.
Not that I've encountered in my rewatching.
I mean, occasionally there were notable female pilots in previous Gundam series, but most of them don't live long enough.
I see.
To rack up 100 kills.
The thing is, and I need to write like an entire dissertation on this. I believe on here spoken before about previous Gundam series having really sketchy gender politics. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, though, it feels like he's trying. It feels like Tamino was trying, because there's never any suggestion that the women are any worse as pilots. If anything, like in Zeta, I made a joke that Zeta is basically a harem anime, because there are several female pilots and they're all just as good as anybody else, except when they're making decisions like breaking off from the attack to defend the habitation part of the ship or something because there are kids there, and it's like, oh, women and their feelings.
Or because men distract them, they have a crush on a guy or whatever.
It's a lot of romantic problems. So it's like, I mean, I feel like if you're coming from a place of believing that women are actually inferior at stuff, you're not going to be writing them as such good pilots. It's just that and it's funny because Camille from Gundam Zeta would be like, oh, women are too emotional for this stuff. And then he would do something incredibly stupid because of his feelings.
Yes.
Those dizzy dames, what can you do?
Yeah, the problem with... Well,
I'm gonna go punch this guy because he made me mad. Yeah.
Because he misgendered me.
Yeah, so it is like... But Gundam does have a history. I mean, in the original Mobile Suit Gundam, at one point, Sayla, Char's sister, starts doing... You know, at one point, she, I guess, steals the Gundam. But she also becomes a part of the, like, she ends up piloting the vehicle that splits off to form Gundam armor. And it's never, like, a big deal that she's a woman doing this.
Yeah, no.
So it's not, like, even mentioned, but yeah, so it's definitely Gundam has a long history of having a lot of really good women pilots, even if they do things like change sides because Char won't sleep with them.
Yeah.
So it does feel like they're trying, but they just needed to work some things out.
Yeah, it's not a problem of skill, at least like in the early stuff. I don't know how the middle stuff is. Well, no, the middle stuff doesn't have as many female pilots as the original Gundam series. Like, lots of skill, but accidental misogynist writing.
Yeah.
It's weird.
But, like I said, in a way that doesn't feel like they were... It just felt like they needed to think about it a little harder, the decisions that the characters were making.
Okay, so, but before we start, we do have some old business to discuss. And by old business, I mean something I heard on Blue Sky from Christine Love, friend of the show.
Yeah.
Who has informed me that apparently there's like an airplane in every Gundam. And you just don't hear about it?
Yes.
So in the...
Doesn't come up
a lot? I mean, the thing is, Mobile Suit Gundam was made to sell model kits.
Right.
So you get a lot of to-sell-toys logic going on. And there's a big chunk in the middle of the series where it was kind of... I think they were really trying to push the sales of the model kits so because the original series almost got canceled.
Right.
Multiple times. And then eventually did get canceled.
So when they were really trying to... There was a point in the middle there where it was like half of all the episodes were just... pointing out how the Gundam had this feature where the pilot took off and then they would send the top and bottom parts of the Gundam to dock with it in midair, and it was like this big impressive thing that they had to practice a lot. And then the other
half...
Where
you can combine the bottom half with rockets or whatever.
Yeah, and you had, like I said, Sayla would come and pilot this other vehicle that had all these extra armor parts that could be deployed to fix to the Gundam. And then the other half of the episodes were just killing off characters who you knew were going to die from the moment they showed up.
Yes.
R.I.P. Kai's girlfriend.
No.
And Ryu, who made it a surprisingly long time, and...
The Kai's episode is so good because you think maybe it's not gonna happen.
No, and it do. And then it does happen. But yes, there's just this little jet fighter. It's called the Core Fighter. And it's just in the middle of the Gundam.
Now, is that also true of the Gundams in this show?
At least the main ones. I was going to say, there's another one that we will get to, and I don't know that we explicitly see the Core Fighter, but we do see the G-Quux's Core Fighter.
Yeah, at some point, yes, we do.
It's the weird little wingy things coming off its back are the wings of the Core Fighter.
Well, yeah, the big sort of pipe turbine thingies off the back, those are the engines.
Yeah.
Bizarre.
Yeah. Gundams have little jet fighters in them.
Not every Gundam... in every series has a Core Fighter.
Yeah.
But most every Gundam, at least in the original continuity, except for Zeta. Zeta doesn't have a Core Fighter because it turns into a plane itself.
I see.
Yeah, because at that point, transforming robot toys were kind of eating the lunch of every other robot toy in the industry. But yeah, it's the Core Fighter. If you watch the original Mobile Suit Gundam, you cannot not know about the Core Fighter because it's extremely important that they make you aware that this is a feature of this awesome mobile suit.
I know the add-ons are not in the movies of the original. I think the Core Fighter is still around, though. Oh, yeah, it's definitely around because it's there at the end, I think. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, there were a few episodes where they would just show the, like, combining practice part of it as the opening, like, the previously on thing, just because they really wanted people to know about the Core Fighter.
Oh, yes, because, like, they're contractually obligated. You gotta show it. Well, we're showing it in the recap. There.
Yeah, we'll just put it in the recap. Gosh. Leave us alone. Yeah, there's a Core Fighter. It's got a little jet. It's got a little jet in it.
All right. So as this episode begins... Neon and Shuji, they are still involved in the clan battles. They're these big Gundam battle bots things. They've rattled off a bunch of victories. It looks like their last one, they beat like a zillion... Zaku's?
No, they beat two, because it's a two-on-two battle with one pilot and a MAV.
Decoys!
Okay. They're inflatable decoys in space, which is... That started in Zeta, and is kind of a long-running tradition in Gundam.
They're like, inflatable?
I feel like it might have been at the very, very tail end, of the original, but maybe I'm misremembering. But it's definitely in Zeta. They use them a good bit, but they're like asteroid shaped.
Yeah. Yeah, in the original, yeah, they were asteroid, but then they were later, they
but
were
because
mecha
it's
shaped.
In space.
You don't need much air in the damn thing.
Yeah, since it's in space, you put a little bit of air in it and just pops right open.
Yeah.
I see.
So they're filled with air.
Now I just want to see them, like, with a bunch of decoys that are clearly just those wacky inflatable tube guys. like the Zaku heads.
But yeah, those are decoys. Which, if you look close at them, if you take a moment and look close, they definitely look
puffy.
Like blow-up toy Zakus.
Yeah.
So that was a fun little in reference there.
So and while this is going on, people are also protesting against the Zeon interference in this colony.
Yeah, everybody wants Zeon out. The ship's still like just floating in the middle.
We get some, like, a couple of those guys from the last episode talking about how, you know, there's a Zeon family dispute with the Zabby family.
Yes.
Giran and Cassilia, who, like I said, they will be on the test.
Oh, man.
The two surviving, well, I mean, that's not
well,
fair.
Well, possibly
I think,
three.
Yeah, but, yeah, apparently Garma seems to have decided to stay out of all this and just go be pretty somewhere. He's so pretty.
Yeah, because in the flashback episode, we got to mention that he left the military and, spoilers, that's the last we hear of him.
Yes, so he has
he
opted out
alive.
Of this whole nonsense. So we just have Cassilia and Giran as the two remaining surviving members of the Zabby family fighting over the remains of Zeon.
Okay. So, but that's pretty much it for them for this episode. We're just reminding everybody that presumably it will be important later. But it's not important in this episode.
It's basically, it's mentioned for the sake of world building, so that you're reminded that they are a thing that's existing in this world that is going on in the background.
So we're just hanging out at Pomeranian Central here.
With the Pomeranian.
Yeah. And Shuji's just like, I'd like to go to Earth sometime.
Okay, not with the Pomeranians, he's in his little... Right. Sewer basement base.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Also, we get a moment, I just like to mention this, we get a moment of Machu at school, and her...
Oh, right.
Yes, and her classmates are real excited about some, like, mobile gambling thing.
Yes, gotcha game.
And she's just like, don't you need to be 18 to play those? And she's just being really critical, and as someone who has never meshed at all with mobile gaming or mobile gambling at all, I definitely relate to, to her being just like, what are you people even doing? So
I'm somebody who enjoys televised sports, and there's just no escaping gambling.
There's a lot of that even outside of I feel like there's less advertising of that outside of sports broadcasting now, but there was a little bit then,
but it's still out there
where it was like inescapable.
There was a while when it was on like every other podcast.
That was really annoying. But yes, Shuji in the sewer, they're asking him what he wants, and Conch, his little robot friend, just prints out his search history. You can't print out people's search history, Conch. That's rude. My search history.
Is this big naturals?
Oh. No, his search history is just used little spaceships.
Hmm. And of course, Amare is very interested in going, and Neon is like, I don't know about that.
Yeah, she doesn't know about a lot of things, poor girl. She's
also
had it
her,
rough.
Her, like, whatever criminal assigns her to do stuff is telling her that, there's a bounty out on that red Gundam.
Yeah. That's not great.
Although, I feel that, I guess this would just be, like, for information on where to find it, not actually bring it in herself.
Yeah, that... That seems like a lot to expect of, like, a random courier. I think they just are looking for tips.
You're not making anybody halt by tossing up your Deli Eats ID badge.
No.
Anyway, now we're at Pomeranian HQ. And there's just a woman hanging around looking for a junk dealer. This is Shiko Sugai.
Oh, yeah, because they run into her outside. Well, Machu and whatever the guy is that has the dog, the Pomeranian. Well, it's not really a Pomeranian.
It's not
a black puffy thing with a blue nose.
Yes.
Well, Pomeranians can be black.
It doesn't quite look
like it's not
like
their most common color, but it is possible.
They're walking, run into a lady who asks for where the junk dealer is. And is like, okay, come with us for the quote-unquote junk dealer.
So this woman, her character model looks like she's from a different show.
Yeah, she's a lot softer and rounder.
She's
not Machu round, but
yeah,
Machu's sort of angular, despite being round.
And
she's in the tradition of Mirai from the original series, where her eyes are dots.
Yeah.
Right, I was wondering what the deal with that was.
Yeah, that's the thing. Sometimes character models in Gundam are just off. Like, they don't have whites of their eyes.
I forget, is Mirai Japanese?
What? Well, the name is Japanese. I can't remember if she was Japanese.
Yeah, I mean, Hayato is, like, Hayato Kobayashi,
yeah.
So he's absolutely of Japanese ancestry.
Well, Bright isn't Japanese. What was Bright?
I guess, yeah, Bright has those same eyes, and he is definitely not suggested to be of Japanese ancestry.
Mirai Yashima, so she's probably Japanese, yeah.
Yeah.
So is this a minor character from an old Gundam series?
No!
It is not. This is a new character.
She is a new character, which, presumably one can infer that she, you know, existed in the other universe and was a fighter in the Federation military, but things happened differently.
And they called her the Witch, and she scored, was it 100 kills?
100 plus. I forget if we get an actual number.
I think we
just sworn it was like 130 or something.
Okay.
That might have just been like online or somewhere.
But because she has 100 kills, that makes her a Unicum? Is that correct? Am I reading this correctly?
I wasn't sure exactly what... I was watching the dub, not the sub, so what the hell were they calling her?
Yeah, that almost sounds like
I wasn't sure
like
if they were
a,
calling a unicorn.
Yeah, it sounds
quite.
Like a mistranslated version of unicorn, which would just, suggest that she's someone
right.
who is very rare or possibly a lesbian willing to be in your threesome.
Because the only thing I could find for Unicum is that it is a Hungarian herbal liqueur.
Mmm, delicious.
The texture of the drink is thick, black, and goopy, and is so bitter that it is often described as an acquired taste.
That sounds amazing.
Okay. At least on her website, on the wiki, the Gundam wiki, the term means a flying ace, because she has 100 kills.
Okay.
Which is way more than an ace. I think it's 5 to be an ace in pilots. Or anyway, but it's Unicum. C-U-M.
Right.
So it's worse than I thought.
But, like, what is... what is the origin of that terminology? Is it something in Japanese?
Yeah, because it's like a combination, clearly, of some words, but it don't say what... It's like Mav. They don't explain. They don't have to. It's just slightly annoying that
Mav is from Top Gun, though, right? It's definitely from Top Gun.
Mav does seem like it was probably pulled from Top Gun.
Although, of course, your wingman should really be your goose.
Yeah, but that doesn't sound as good. That doesn't sound nearly as cool.
How about your Iceman?
Your Iceman.
That does sound cool, but possibly copyright questions.
Yeah. That's right, Kazansky. I am dangerous. she's just talking about, I killed a zillion people during the war, but then I settled down, I had a family, but,
she's really, like, we cannot overstate how soft-spoken she is.
Yes.
Yeah.
She's very femme.
Yes, and it is very much concealing her madness.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's cray-cray.
Because she really wants to know about that Red Gundam, and whether he's, like, a new type, and...
Yeah, because she's obsessed with it, because, like, as she says, like, the Federation lost the war, but she never lost.
Yes.
She never lost a fight. Except when her Mav died, but she was still alive.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, her Mav was killed. And
in a fight with the Red Gundam.
It's strongly implied that she was, like, in love with him or something.
Possibly.
That does seem to be the feeling.
Or at least very attached to him.
Yeah. It's nothing explicit about the nature of their relationship, and, you know, she is now married and has a kid.
But the way she's obsessed and out for revenge, kind of, is like, yeah, she probably wanted to fuck him.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, well, you know, it's really not fair that, you know, we can't just have it all. I can't be a wife and mother and also kill people in my robot suit. But, hey, maybe those new types, maybe they can have it all, huh?
Also, she doesn't believe in new types, even though she
says
clearly is one.
They're Zeon propaganda. Oh, yes. By the end of the episode, yeah. Lady, you can't say there's no new types. You can't say it's Zeon propaganda. You is a new type.
Which, I mean, in the original series, there are definitely people who doubt the existence of new types, and some of them clearly are new types. So that's...
Well, yeah, because it also, like... Almost all of the white-based main crew are new types to a degree.
I guess it's like being like, I'm not a mutant. I mean, sure, I can read people's minds sometimes, but I'm not one of those.
Although, also, it's debatable in some things. Like, in the original Gundam, like, Bright at one point feels a new type reaction, but he's always been, like, an old type. He's never been
a new type. I thought he felt a new type reaction... Mirai.
Yeah.
So, like, it was probably her affecting him rather than...
Yes. If a new type is loud enough...
Yes.
Someone
that everyone can hear them. Like, he says...
Also,
that
I was unaware that they called regular people old types.
Yes.
I mean, well, not formally.
Well, that's like how the mutants call people flat scans or whatever.
Yeah, it's more conversational than that. So...
Okay.
I don't think it was in the original. I think it was like a backronym kind of thing.
There is...
Because we have new types, there are old types.
There is a point in Zeta when, like, Amuro is talking about that horrible girl that he's dating and says something about...
Miltorchica.
About her being an old type. So it's not, like, a thing that's going on anybody's paperwork, but it's just sort of, like, something that would be used in conversation.
And so we soon find out that that the witch is indeed entering the next clan battle.
Yeah.
Dun dun dun.
And then we see her in like a Gundam flight simulator.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she is apparently working with this group that is I guess it's like if Blackwater was sponsoring some kind of
battle bots.
Yeah, battle bots.
Yeah.
Like, it is some kind of military security company that's sponsoring this that is not usually involved in backwater junker battles. So
this is being run by scientist Mosk Han?
Yes.
Yes, Mosk Han.
Is this guy important?
Not important,
no,
but
he was in the original Gundam.
Yes.
For an episode.
He was a guy who was in one episode who helped upgrade the original Gundam.
Yeah.
Because the model kit, people said it needed to be 20% cooler. So it needed some upgrades.
Okay. So, we are pretty shortly in battle here. And it's the witch and her... And her Mav.
Who gets a name, maybe, but I don't remember. They're unimportant.
I don't think they do get a name.
No, it's just...
Her Mav. Just
looking on the...
Yeah.
Looking on the wiki here, is it...
There's a list of a lot of names who show up at their time. Okada.
Okada.
Oh, I forget. Is the model kit of the standard colors called, like, Bokata version or something? Because I know hers is...
Maybe? I don't know.
I mean, that's how you learn half of the stuff, is by what they call the model kits. It's like names of Bayverse Transformers characters. You don't find out what they're actually called until they make a toy of them.
It appears she does not appear in anything else on this, but this character model has big lesbian energy.
Yeah. Yes,
I mean, maybe. Maybe she's hanging out with the witch for a reason. Maybe she's got a crush on her. Maybe. Maybe this is just going to propagate the cycle of revenge for killing someone you really wanted to get with.
It never ends.
And so instead they were expecting gun cannons for these, but instead they're in Gelgoogs.
Yes!
Gelgoogs!
Yeah, the gun cannons are, if you remember the flashback episode when Char steals the Gundam, the other mobile suit at the Federation base that he ends up fighting was a gun cannon. So they're very, like, basic Federation suits that I assume, because what we hear here is that the Gelgoog should not be in civilian hands because they haven't been decommissioned. So I guess that means the light gun cannon has been decommissioned.
So the Gelgoog is like a pre-existing Gundam thing.
Okay, kind I looked of... her up, and yeah, she really does have big lesbian energy.
Yes. The Gelgoog name is from the original Gundam. It's the upgraded... It's basically a better version of Zaku. It's
okay.
More complicated than that, but it's a better space design suit.
But what this... This is a gem, is what this is.
Kind of, yeah, because they describe it as, like, the Zeon's version of a mass-production Gundam. Which is basically, well, the Federation version was the GIM.
Yes.
The GM. So this is a combination of the Gelgoog and the GIM into a new thing called the Gelgoog.
Yes.
I see.
It's like, what if the people, what if Zeon had made a mass production Gundam instead of the Federation? And one of the things is they would call it something ridiculous. Instead of calling it the very basic GM or GEM, because GEM is just GM. Also, the GEMs in the original series were basically like your stormtroopers. I mean, they were on the good side,
well,
but
the
they
good
were
guys stormtroopers. Well, good guys in quotes.
Yeah, they were on the protagonist side, but also they were the sort of thing where the pilot does a Wilhelm scream before exploding.
Yes. So they were like those guys in the white helmets at the beginning of the first Star Wars.
Yeah. So it's definitely that kind of vibe with them. But, I mean, they're still... If you got a good pilot in one, I mean, it's still going to be good.
Mm. Yeah, so this thing is just weird. It kind of looks like a Gelgoog with the armor ripped off, painted like a GM.
I love
it. It's got like a weird face.
Yes.
Yeah, with the... Try eyes. The eyes are new and different.
The eyes do look a bit like, because, I mean, one of the things that first struck me about the GEM design is it's got that sort of raised in at the top middle so that it kind of looks like it's saying, oh my god, don't hit me.
Yeah, it looks surprised. Like, the GEM's eye thing is like a cross shape. Big and wide.
Yeah.
Okay. On a round head.
So it,
Whereas the Gelgoog is... A little wonkier.
But I am a big fan of GEMs because as someone who came to Gundam from liking, you know, realistic military... Well, not necessarily military sci-fi, but realistic grounded sci-fi, I like that there's just, like, a mass production one that you could, like, if you had a OC, you could have colors that were, like, that particular character's special one, and... And you have, you know, ones in canon that are like that. So I like a good mass production type. It makes things feel more realistic and less magic. So yes, I was glad to see the Gelgoog show up.
And so the battle begins, and right off the bat, they're like, yeah, this witch lady, she's not going to like try and size you up. She's going to come at you right away, and she's going to fight you.
Yeah.
And also, she uses something called the stigma attack, where she like hooks onto you with like a tow line.
Yeah, she's
little
got
grappling
little
hook thing to,
because they are fighting in zero gravity. This is really something that only works if you're fighting in space.
it's a neat idea, but I question it, because the idea is, like, you're moving, you hook an anchor on so you can spin around by orbiting your opponent, basically. But in the process of doing that, wouldn't you spin them, too?
I guess, but...
The physics, I debate the physics of it, but the fight looks cool, because she's whipping around really fast.
And also, they're always saying, well, that's why they call her the witch, even though shouldn't that be why they call her, I don't know, the fisherman, or the angler?
Well, the thing is, like, when she's fighting you, you're not going to notice the goddamn line. She's just going to be murdering you.
Yeah, that's the thing, is they show, like, after combat, you know, they have... Yeah, they're looking at
what's left of the Zaku she destroyed.
Pictures of, like, an after-combat breakdown of a Zaku that she defeated. And they're trying to figure out what made all these marks on it. And you know, they did figure it out, but it's not something that... It's not obvious this is what she's doing when you're in the middle of a battle.
Ooh, or they could call her the scorpion.
Ooh, there you go.
Yeah, the way she hooks around, yeah, that'd be kind of cool.
Get over here!
Yeah, that'd work on multiple levels.
She should use it that way. That would be fun.
So, pretty quickly, she ends up knocking our protagonist out of the fight for a little bit.
Yep. Hmm. All Machu can really do is just stand back and watch as the witch goes after Shuji.
She doesn't really care about Machu. She really just wants the red gun.
Yeah. To the point where her Mav is like, you really need to let this go. You're going to get yourself hurt real bad.
Yes.
Again, her Mav, who entirely possibly wants to fuck her.
Yes. And she's just not, you know, she can't get at this red gun because he has these abilities. And, she seems to also have those same abilities, so she is sort of able to, you know, use this this hook thing to sort of whip around and smack him around a little.
Yeah, because, you know, as we covered with new types, they have a heightened sense of, like, spatial awareness, so she's able to use this. Also, Shuji is using the Gundam Hammer, which I am fond of, because it's called the Gundam Hammer, and that's the thing that's just the, like, mace on a chain.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why it's called a hammer when it's just a mace on a chain, but it is called the Gundam Hammer.
Yeah, you think they call it the Gundam Flail or the Gundam Morningstar?
Yeah. Oh,
the hammer is shit. It's the hammer and something.
I would think the hammer would literally be like a giant mallet that they would use.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like a thing that could happen on this show.
Hammer or something.
It's giant. No, that is Gal Gaigar with Goldeon.
Oh.
Which is literally an enormous giant robot-sized Pika hammer. It's like a squeaky hammer. It's got the little bellows, the little plastic bellows. I love that show. It's ridiculous.
And yeah, so we get a flashback here. Her Mav was indeed killed by Char during the last war, and that she's been just obsessed with vengeance ever since.
It's tragic. The music definitely lets us know that it's tragic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And as she's about to go in for the kill here, they start sort of intruding on each other's thoughts because clearly they're both new types.
Yeah. They are definitely both new types.
Well, because it's chanting la.
And then everybody else starts hearing mysterious singing, which they refer to as the la-la sound.
Well, because it sounds like la la.
It's the la-la sound.
Is that really the best thing to come up with?
So that's the best they could do.
Yeah.
But she's still insistent that these things that clearly exist and that she is one of do not exist. And she uses like a pair of laser guns to sort of like entrap him.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, she's got little
she somehow
bits.
Places guns that are remote. Yeah, I guess they are bits.
I assume they'd be bits, which are sometimes mobile suits. Mostly Zeon, I guess.
Well,
like the Zeta used them.
Well, the Red Gundam had them. It had four of them. They've all been destroyed.
Yes.
Which is why he's using the hammer.
Yes. So the little like remote guns that they have sometimes are bits. But yeah, she sets up some bits, but when she fires them, he's not there.
Yes, and then we get a very, oh, he's behind me, isn't he?
Yeah, he just disappears, pops up behind her, and then straight up, like, impales her from the back.
Right through the cockpit.
Fatality.
Yes.
So once again, the rules of the clan battle are to decapitate your opponent's mobile suit, which is generally not... I mean, there are some rare exceptions, Psycho Gundam. But generally, the pilot is not in the head. So it's normally not supposed to be a fatality. But no, he chooses to specifically drive his beam saber through the cockpit.
Which does cause the entire thing to explode after a few seconds, with destroying the head. Also,
mobile suits do that.
Here's an argument. If he'd chopped off the head, would she have stopped?
Fair.
She would not have stopped.
I mean, can it still work without the head?
Yeah.
Well, that's the main camera, so the rest of it would work. You just, your main camera's fucking gone.
You're operating blind at that point, so. It disables a mobile suit without harming the pilot in general, which is why no one ever does it, because you gotta blow them up so the characters can die.
But before she does finally blow up, she says something about she's having a new type talk with Shuji about somebody on the other side of the Gundam, which is a really strange wording.
Right, they're in, like, the Sailor Moon dimension.
Yeah.
And, so it's like he's in contact with some unseen figure, which, I've not seen the rest of the show, but I'm going to guess that it's Char, who is still alive.
We will see.
It's the most obvious answer. It may not be what it is, but
I do question her need for revenge against the Red Gundam as a thing versus its pilot, because...
Yeah, even in the episode they mentioned she's not actually out for revenge, she's just obsessed. Chalia, I think, says that.
Right.
She just wants to defeat it.
Yes.
Which, yeah, I mean, I feel like if you were out for reasonable revenge, you would not...
Hunting down the pilot, not just trying to destroy the robot you never got to fight.
Yeah, the vehicle that was being piloted in the battle that killed your Mav. So, but yeah.
Yeah, especially since she's got married, she still has a wedding ring on, she's still married, and she says, like, her child grew up early in the episode, but her child can only be, like, 5 years old, because she was...
When we see the, like, flash to him, like, her thoughts of him, I mean, I feel like grown up in this sense is just, like...
Going to school.
Yeah, going to school and no longer nursing and needing 24/7 care. Like, he's not a baby anymore.
Yeah.
It's not to say that he's, like, an adult, but it is to say that he does not need constant maternal care. It's still sad. I mean, that's very sad. That's more sad than if he was an adult.
Like, Rob, could you tell she was going to die as soon as she showed up?
I could not. No, I thought maybe she was going to be like a recurring antagonist.
Oh, that's so wonderful. Well, it's because we've seen so much Gundam.
Right.
Yeah, I would say that this is a little more subtle. Like, she's
By the time she was talking to the Pomeranians, I was like, oh, there's no way she's getting out of this episode alive.
I feel like she could have been talked out of it.
It makes sense, because you have to show someone obsessed with the Gundam. It shows, like, how dangerous the Gundams are, how they have affected people in the entire, solar system, as it were. Like, people, like, new types beget hatred, as they say.
Yeah, she is a tragically obsessed character.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I just kind of assumed it would be a thing where, like, they'd cut off the head of her Gundam, and she'd, like, swear revenge, and then she'd kind of be like, and then she'd pop up again.
That would work if this was a longer series, but as it's only 12 episodes...
Right, I guess there is that.
You gotta speed run that.
Yeah, you gotta speed run your character arcs.
Yeah, so she's like, she's an archetype of characters from previous Gundams, of the enemy pilot obsessed with fighting the Gundam, who dies in an episode or two.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're Chalia Bull from the previous.
Yeah, like original OG Chalia Bull.
Anyway, so this lady's suit just straight up explodes.
They do that a lot.
And that's the end of the episode.
Yeah. We get a whole
No wrap-up or anything, just kablam, there's the credits.
Yep, that's it. Episode's over. Oh, she's dead.
Machu goes on about, as the credits are starting, the song starts to kick in about, like, how to reach Shuji's level, you must go this hard. She had to get that far and that obsessed to nearly beat Shuji.
It was definitely like a moment watching this where, you know, Shuji just straight up murders the person and you're like, oh, wow. Because you don't think of these characters as being like that. I mean, for instance, you know, Witch from Mercury, they're not usually killing their opponents because they're in, like, Utena-style duels.
Yeah, this is upping the stakes to a degree that Shuji will just murder someone.
Yeah, the fact that your manic pixie dream hobo is just gonna straight up murder people is like, oh, he's not okay.
And yeah, that's it for this was an interesting one. We got what I thought was gonna be a new antagonist, but it turned out to be a one-episode character who is
R.I.P.
Now a bunch of scattered atoms.
I mean, this is very much something that Gundam has always done with using characters like this to sort of drive home the... I mean, Gundam came about as that whole trauma of World War II thing. So this is...
Yes, the futility of war as, hey, here's an interesting character, they're dead.
Yeah, is showing...
Hide and then die with more emotion than Transformers comics often do.
Yes, so she is...
Well, okay, some of them are really bad.
Representative of... Yeah, yes, she's a scrounge.
She's an obsessed scrounge.
She's representative of the harm that war does to people, so...
Yes.
That is a common theme with Gundam.
Okay.
Oh, a side note before we leave the episode. Oh my god, I don't know if Jen noticed this as I was, well, back when Twitter was a thing we would go on.
Uh-huh.
She got so much fan art. Oh my god. Like from just the preview
of the sexy variety.
Okay, half of that, yes.
Well, she's cute.
It was a mix of sexy because she's kind of busty, but just general fan art because she was an interesting character design, and tragic art. Like it was running the gamut, but like from the when she was previewed in the previous episode until the end of this episode and beyond, like people were cranking out fan art.
Also, probably cranking out other things.
Yeah, probably.
But, yeah, no, some of it was not that kind of fan art.
No, but there was just, like, this spike of fan art for G-Quux when she showed up.
I mean, she's a very interesting character, because she is, like I said, she's femme. She's very soft-spoken and quiet and seems very nice, and she is...
Until you get her in the Gundam,
also or
the Gelgoog.
Yes.
And she swings. Oh, that actually is another Gundam thing. Although, that was more with cyber new types where...
Yeah!
People's personalities will shift when they're in the mobile suit.
Yeah. But that was because there were, like, aspects of the Saikamu system that were fucking with them extra hard.
Yeah.
Which is something we will be getting into in a couple episodes.
Ooh.
We will have some cyber new types. Yes, spoilers, I'm sorry. But we will touch on cyber new types for an episode.
But yeah, cyber new types is a thing that comes up.
I mean, I don't know what that is, so I'm excited to find out.
They're the artificial new types.
Okay.
I was going to have a guess, but yeah, it's...
Okay.
I think you mentioned those before, and then they usually end up going crazy.
Yeah, yes. They're basically the lab-created new types, and they are generally, again, generally female, which kind of ties into that whole Tamino, what are you doing? But also generally cray-cray, like, completely, utterly. Like, one of them in Zeta, like, you have to convince her that someone is her big brother.
Uh-huh.
You have to assign her a big brother.
Well, that's like...
You have to assign her an Oni-chan.
Because, like, we'll probably get into it again. Cyber new types, we're never explained how they make cyber new types in any series. It's presumably... people have guessed, like, it's, like, surgery plus, like, psychological conditioning in the, like, that character she's talking about, like...
Possibly drugs.
They trained her to have, like, a handler who she called her big brother.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we'll get into that more when we get to that episode, but yeah, that will come up. That does get touched on, even though that wasn't from the original series. It was from Zeta.
There were no cyber new types in the original. They were just new types, but backfill of other things, like they'd started during the war trying to make cyber new types.
Yeah. I got a sleepy little cat on my desk.
Oh.
All right, and that is it for us for this week. Next week we'll be back with more Rescue Bots Adventures. Next month we'll be back with more Superhuman Samurai Cyber Pod with Neon Doesn't Know About Kirikiri. Sorry, Kirikira.
Yes. Kirikira.
Right, Kirikira is when you go on like a fake date with a Japanese lady and then she puts a bunch of long needles into you.
Yes.
Well, Kira just means sparkle. Sparkle, sparkle.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a silly name for it, but it is an apt description.
Yes, it's a good description. But yes, we will be back with that.
Although, Nyan doesn't know about Kira. Kira kind of sounds like describing a laser pointer to a cat.
Should have named one of my cats Neon. I have some kittens right now. I could have done that. Honestly, if I had had a more even sex parody in my... in my current litter, they might have been the G-Quux cast. But as it is, I have three girls and one boy. I guess one of them could have been Cecilia. Thinking if the gray had been a boy, he could have been Char, but she's a girl.
Char should be an orange.
Yeah, I could see that. Because he's blonde.
He's
like
dumb.
A buff, especially. Okay, sometimes he's dumb, too.
But of course, we'll be back with more Rescue Bots next week, and we are on Blue Sky, we are on Mastodon, and we have a Patreon.
Yes, we are hosted on iaconunderground.net, where we have our normal Stasis Pod series, currently tucked well into Rescue Bots Academy, but it goes all the way back to Beast Wars, with little skipping around some Unicron trilogy. So there's that as well, if you came into this and are not familiar with our other stuff. Also, David and I do a twice-monthly Transformers news podcast, occasionally delving into like a big chunk of time of me just talking about the new Micronauts cartoon because it's important. But mostly about Transformers, occasionally about tariffs, which sucks, but mostly about Transformers. And yes, we have a Patreon set up for helping with hosting expenses. That is patreon.com/iaconunderground. There you can get our monthly special episodes we do. Of course, we, as you may have noticed, do not do ads in general. So instead of having an ad-free stream, we just do an extra fun thing every month. And they are usually super fun. For the month of August, David and I are declaring war on the nation of Canada because Rob made us watch an episode of the 90s Fantastic Four cartoon. And it was terrible.
I've been forced to relocate to Latveria.
Yeah, I did post, when I posted it to Blue Sky and Mastodon, I posted a link to that, the song that the Thing does at the end of that episode, because it needed to be experienced. For September, we are going to do something much more objectively good, and we are watching Thunderbolts, because it's on streaming now. David has not seen it yet. David was not convinced by the trailers, so we will see if he can be converted or if he is still not going to mesh with our little found family team of disasters.
Would the Thing's album be called Thing Sing?
Oh. I assume it would be like that that No Limit record Doing Things with the bears who are sitting around a table smoking cigars, but would be doing things and it's just him.
Yeah.
Or ultimately it would be called So Here's the Thing.
Oh my god.
Which, I want a movie called So Here's the Thing so bad.
It's causing me psychic damage. causing me so much harm. So yes, that is at patreon.com/iaconunderground, and you get access to those for as little as $1 a month. We're not one of these Patreons that starts you at $10 a month like some that I've looked into recently. Like, come on guys, really?
Yeah, that should not be the starting price
for a podcast.
So tune in next time as we go into outer space and into the depths with Rescue Bots Academy.
It's fun.
Until then, I'm Rob.
I'm Jen.
La la, I'm David.
La la la. La. La.